dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the War of Ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. A woman who has been at the forefront of the war for the free world for the better part of two decades, starting with her time in the Minnesota State Senate, and then her time in the United States Congress, and now in her new incarnation as the Dean of the Robertson School of Government at Regent University, is our first guest. She is the Honorable, and I mean Honorable, Michelle Bachmann. She has been a friend of mine and a greatly admired colleague for much of that period, and I couldn't be more pleased to be saluting her with you all on the aftermath, the day following an extraordinary public service that she's just rendered in her capacity as Dean of the Robertson School in hosting an incalculably important event. It was a 7-hour marathon discussion with some of the country's best experts on election integrity. We're going to talk with Michelle about both the problems with election integrity in the previous election, namely that of the 2020 presidential race, and some of the state and other offices as well, and also the coming threat to future elections and their integrity that is represented by legislation now under consideration by the Congress of the United States, in which she served, as I said, with great distinction. Congresswoman, Dean, Michelle, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. It's so good to have you with us, and congratulations from the bottom of my heart on what you did yesterday.
Frank, thank you so much. I'm so happy that you were able to watch it. You said almost nearly in its 7-hour entirety. You know, after we were all done yesterday, the ITAV crew and I were talking, and they said that a phenomena occurred that they had never seen before. We had no, normally, if you go to a conference, you go to a conference, you're at a hotel, you've got all your speakers, you might go in and out and grab coffee or go back up to your hotel room. But for 7 hours, people were looking at their screen, either their computer screen or a monitor. And the IT guy said, nearly every person who watched this conference stayed for about 3/4 of the time. Now think of that, 7 hours. And people stayed nearly 3/4 of the time. And it's because I think, Frank, the material was so compelling that people went from presenter to presenter to presenter because it all came together. It was explosive. It made sense. It helped us to make sense and deconstruct what happened last November and in the aftermath. And I agree with you. It wasn't me. It was the hand of God blessing this thing. But it was the combination of these presenters, what they said, their enthusiasm. And it was almost, Frank, like you could sense from the presenters, finally, I can speak. It was like they were saying, finally, I can tell the truth about what I know. So it was, everyone was credible. They were all first class. There were no nuts. There were no fringe people. This was just great evidence that you looked at and you thought to yourself, there's an injustice going on right now with all this evidence that we have of what really happened in the last election. And then as you watch the Biden administration, what they're doing to deconstruct freedom in America, that's why I love the name of your radio program. I think you have the most perfect radio name ever.
Well, listen, let me just respond quickly, because so much of what you said is worthy of further elaboration. First of all, it was the hand of God. There's no question about it. You pulled this off in record time with as you say, an A-team group of speakers. And just to go through a couple of them, Dr. Ben Carson, Eric Metaxas, Mark Stein. But there are three that I wanted particularly to focus on among the many others that you had, because they really did deliver what this audience was clearly yearning for. And I think the American people more generally, and I know you have in mind, and we'll talk a little bit about it in the course of our conversation with you today, what you'll do with this, because it isn't a one-off. This is vital information that has not come to light, really, in anything remotely like this way. But Michelle, talk a little bit, if you would, about, three segments of the program, I guess is the best way to describe it. Dr. Peter Navarro, former senior advisor to President Trump, Jim and Joe Hoft, and third and hardly least in this order of battle, Dr. David Clements. They all presented vital information about, as you say, what happened on November 3rd and in the surrounding period.
Yes, they did. And if I can just by way of setup, this was an idea. I'm the dean of the Graduate School of Government at Regent University. We're located in Virginia Beach, Virginia. We have five different master's programs, and our new one is campaigns. And as I came into the school, it was just as we were going through this certification process for Joe Biden. And it's a strange thing to say, but I actually felt like I was despairing. I thought, why did I take a job as dean teaching government to the next generation when I'm watching effectively a coup of my own government? And also, is why would we have a campaign program when there can't be trustworthy elections going forward? So as I was wrestling with this, I thought, you know, the story has never been told of what really happened in November with the election and the aftermath with the court cases. So I thought, why don't we do a conference and highlight what happened, and then bring attention to our school and our new master's degree program on campaigns. That was the genesis. And so then the next question was, who are the...
Yeah, it could hardly be literally a more teachable moment, really.
Exactly, because the next generation needs to know and understand what happened. So the three people that you mentioned, Dr. Peter Navarro, who was the Secretary of Trade under President Trump, wrote three seminal reports on an overview of the election. It's the Navarro Report. First of all, I should mention the entire conference will be available sometime today. If people go to regent.edu, that's regent.edu, this fabulous, never before seen evidence will be up on this website. And Frank, it'll be easier to watch because we're breaking the conference up speaker by speaker so people can click on which speaker they want to watch. Peter Navarro.
Michelle, hold the thought, because we have to take a very short break. When we come back, we'll drill down on what Peter Navarro delivered in the way of the receipts, as Steve Bannon likes to say, as well as what the Hoft brothers and Dr. David Clements also presented with the great Michelle Bachmann. Right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're visiting with Michelle Bachmann, now the dean of the Robertson School of Government at Regent University, and the hostess, I guess I should say, of an extraordinary program yesterday that you will be able to find at the Regent University website, regent.edu.
/election integrity. Every speaker will be hosted at that site.
Fabulous. Okay, so quickly, just give us the highlights of what Peter Navarro contributed to the program yesterday.
Sure. Peter Navarro did a stellar job going through the six swing states in the 2020 election and the voter fraud. So he went through the methods of voter fraud, and then he went through the various states. unbelievable, drop-dead, compelling evidence, and he put that all up on screen. Then the Hoft brothers, who are the editors of the GatewayPundit.com, and if your listeners aren't going five times a day to the GatewayPundit.com, they should start going there. They have the best archive anywhere in the United States of the news stories about the fraud that happened in the last election. They have over 1,700 stories. They boiled that down to 1 hour. And they put the whole story together for the audience.
Tell us about Dr. David Clements and what he brought to the program.
Dr. David Clements is a law professor at New Mexico State University. He looked at all of the lawsuits that we've heard about, the state cases, the federal cases. He went to publicly available documents. He read all the pleadings. He read every affidavit. He was blown away as an attorney and also as a prosecutor who's tried over 160 cases. He said there was ample evidence for a judge to take the cases up and rule. And he was blown away that these judges dismissed the cases. He was laying that evidence out, and he literally has hours and hours of evidence. He said the problem is there's too much evidence of fraud to boil it down and show it all, but he gave some samplings of that. And I heard from many people last night, Frank, they loved Dr. David Clements. They just loved what he had to say. So go click on him at regent.edu. Yeah. Go, your listeners can go to regent.edu. They can watch all of this for themselves.
They should. And I know you're also going to be turning it into the proceedings are going to be made available as well in one of the products of the Robertson School. So you're making a permanent contribution here, Michelle, and it's surpassing importance.
Yes, we have a law school at Regent University. The law students are taking the transcript from yesterday. They're turning that into a law review article and making a record and putting that into the academy so that at the university level, there can be a discussion about this and also in the legal community, because it seems like every portal and gateway in our culture has slammed the door shut on talking about the election. We're changing that narrative, and we're going into the academy to have the discussion.
Now, here's the key point, Michelle. You mentioned Dr. David Clements' finding that there's plenty of evidence that judges could have ruled on, and yet every single one of something like 60 different cases wound up with the courts deciding against the plaintiffs who were bringing these charges of fraud or irregularities or unconstitutional conduct or what have you. And the thing that was so vital about what you did here was that evidence is now finally out. And I can't imagine anyone with any shred of integrity in the media, in the social media world, in political life, as you have been for much of yours, looking at that evidence, if they were to do so, and saying other than there's a problem here, there's a serious problem here, and whatever we have said to this point that there's no evidence, whatever we've said to this point that if there were evidence of fraud or what have you, it wasn't material, it has been wrong. And this warrants close scrutiny by all of the relevant authorities, whether they're the executive branch, the FBI, the Justice Department, the United States Congress, the media, the public at large. This must not stand. And I think you've really rendered such an incredible, important service in making it accessible to all of us with this extremely high quality group of people. I know we won't do justice to this next topic, but I do need to move to it, Michelle Bachman, if you would. The other piece of your extraordinary 7-hour program, in fact, you led with it, is not the retrospective, it's the prospective. It's what is in store for election integrity. If the Congress of the United States, now dominated by a very tiny margin of Democratic politicians, has its way, talk to us about what's been called HR1, now S1 in the Senate, Michelle, both drawing on your own experience with the Congress, but also what your speakers addressed yesterday.
Well, today, the political reality is that the House the Senate, the White House are all controlled by the Democrat Party. In my opinion, we're being led by the most selfish, craven political people that we've ever been led by. Because what they want to do with H.R. 1 is ensure that all of the shady voting, thieving voting practices from last November's election be institutionalized, that that be the norm. They want to usurp and do away with all the voting protections in each of the states and federalize the elections and remove any possibility of the American people challenging any voting results. They want outcome-based elections. So they predetermine that Democrats will forever be in charge going forward. We've never seen a piece of legislation like this. John Fund, formerly of the Wall Street Journal, wrote, this is the worst piece of legislation that he has ever seen in his life. He's been in D.C. for a lot of years. Hans von Spakovsky from the Heritage Institute said also that there is no such thing as voter suppression. And he is the expert that I know of in the United States. He said what they're seeking to address doesn't even exist. And then we had Jay Ashcroft, who's the Secretary of State from Missouri, who said this is an absolutely rank unconstitutional bill. And he said secretaries of state will band together across the United States and file challenges based on constitutionality. This bill should never see the light of day. And yet it is the number one priority for Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and Joe Biden. And what's worrisome is that this bill has already passed the House. It's in the Senate. Joe Biden will sign the bill. The only two people that are stopping this from becoming law are two Democrat senators, Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona. Manchin is from West Virginia. They've stated they will not vote to overcome the filibuster rule. And what that means is that if they buckle, and that's a very strong likelihood because in Washington, D.C., you can buy almost anybody. And if they buckle, that means it's over. And if H.R. 1 passes, quite literally, we will have lost our country effectively because we will have lost the right to vote. Your vote matters. And if we have lost the right to our vote, that means we can never again change a political leader because political leaders choose the laws we live under. We will never again hold anybody accountable. We'll live under a small group of elites. We'll do as they say. And this beautiful 400-year experiment in rule by the consent of the governed will effectively be over. And that's sobering. It's a terrible thing, but it's the reality. And it's because the most selfish, craven group of politicians ever assembled has decided they want all the power. They don't want us to have power.
Could I put a fine point on this and ask your opinion? Because it seems to me it's not just about power. It's not just about being, cravenly pursuing it in their own self-interest. There's an agenda at work here, it seems to me, Michelle, and you have been such a freedom fighter over the years, and we've worked together on a lot of different threats to our country. But fundamentally, isn't this really about the fundamental transformation of the country, as Barack Obama used to say, turning it into something it's never been? As you say, it ends the experiment, but really it mutates it into something that we've seen a lot of horrible experiments with, which is totalitarianism. It's a one-party state from here on out if this legislation is approved, because these two critical senators buckle to the pressure to abandon the minority rights that are protected by the so-called filibuster in the Senate. Is that overstating the problem?
No, I don't think you are at all. Barack Obama told us that when he took office earlier this century, that that's what he was going to do. I've never seen Barack Obama happier than he's been later. And he's in the news almost every day. We know that he's the one really at the helm of the White House these days. It's certainly not Joe Biden, and it's certainly not Kamala Harris. This is an agenda.
His third term, as they say.
Yeah, that's right. These are people who want to see the United States in its current form go away. And they're delighted. They're delighted to see that. But again, these people are tools. They're tools. They've been paid off. They've got their multiple homes, their million-dollar paycheck. It looks like Netflix is essentially the pass-through organization to pay all of these guys off with all of their phony deals. But they're willing to sell down the river freedom. Freedom. so they can enrich themselves, because they're going to, they, in their mind, they're going to rise above it, and their kids are going to rise above it, but ours won't. And we'll have to live with the devastating consequences. We've seen this before.
It's a movie that does not end well.
No, it doesn't. And
Michelle, we are hard out of time. I'm sorry to say, I pray that you will come back with further insights as you take aboard and help the rest of us do the same with respect to this extraordinary product. Give us the website one more time as to where people can start today to find both the program itself and the products that will flow from it.
It'll be put up sometime later today at regent.edu/election integrity.
Wonderful. Michelle Bachman, God bless you for this new work you're doing. It couldn't be more important, and I think you're off to a splendid start. Thank you for it. Thank you for all you've done to this point. And do come back to us, please, soon with updates on how it's coming at your end as well as ours. God bless you. Next up, we'll speak with Greg Kevin Freeman about economic warfare and what it means to you straight after this.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back. We're joined by Kevin Freeman, one of our regulars, I'm proud to say, here at Secure Freedom Radio, a senior fellow of the Center for Security Policy and the proprietor of the Economic War Room at Blaze TV. He is an author of two best-selling books, Game Plan and Secret Weapon, and you can follow his great works at economicwarroom.com. Kevin, it's so good to have you with us. I was just talking with Michelle Bachman about a remarkable program that she sponsored at Regents University yesterday. And it turns out you were involved in a similar program, somewhat shorter, in Dallas last night with several of our friends, Russ Ramsland and Debbie George Addis, and a prominent Texas senator by the name of Don Huffines. Talk a little bit about your own efforts on behalf of bringing to light the truth of what went on in this election cycle, a truth that you've done much to illuminate to this point with your terrific coalition, the Every Legal Vote Coalition.
Sure, Frank, and always good to be with you. What happened last night, and I assume what happened with Michelle Bachman's program at Regent, is that we're exposing the big lie. Regardless of what you think of former President Donald Trump, the reality of it is that this was not a normal election. And there's this push to say, oh, no, everything's the same. It's not. Regardless of whether or not you believe in electronic election fraud, meaning the machines manipulating things, you have to step back and look at what happened, and it was a very unusual election. Number one, it was in the midst of a pandemic, and we all have to acknowledge that. And the rules were changed state by state by state, and they were changed in many cases by the without the legislature's involvement, by the Secretary of State or by the unelected election officials. The reality of it is that we experienced a very different election than at any time in the past. That means that there were cases where voter ID wasn't considered. There are cases where mail-in ballots were used and sent to wrong addresses, that there was no chain of custody, all kinds of things that would lead you to believe. And the big lie is there was no fraud. And that is a big lie, because there's fraud in every aspect of American life. There's fraud in every aspect of human life. It's human nature. And to deny that it could have happened in this election just because you want to, you're opposed to a certain candidate, is ludicrous. So the reality of it is there was fraud, and it is provable.
You know, we talk a lot in this program, Kevin, about the left's use of projection or deflection to try to dissemble about what they're doing. Often it takes the form of telling you somebody else is engaged in what they are actually engaged in. And a big lie certainly is a term that has been widely employed by the left and its sympathizers in the media, to the extent they're not one and the same, to discredit the kind of information that Michelle Bachman and her team exposed at length, and I think absolutely dispositively showed there's a problem here. And that I gather you guys did in Dallas last night, and the question, of course, always recurs, what's going to be done about it? And some of the conversation that took place yesterday in the course of the 7 hours of the program at Regents, and I imagine in your efforts as well, was how do we unscramble these eggs? What do we do about the fact that the election was stolen and we have in office today individuals who did not actually win a mandate from the American people, doing, by the way, horrific things to the country with that non-mandate?
Well, first, once you acknowledge that there were unusual things that happened in the election, if you just went back to the way that things are supposed to be, the way that the law is written, you will eliminate a large portion of the problems. But they're not willing to do that. Once in power, this group has proposed what was H.R. 1, now S.1, which is a mechanism to make permanent federalization of the elections under very loose laws, where voter ID is not required, where mail-in ballots are mandated, where you have very little ability to keep track. And then on top of it, making new states and doing all sorts of things that would guarantee a permanent majority. And it doesn't matter if you're a Democrat or if you're a Republican. You should not want one party having permanent power and control, because power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And that's how great nations fail.
It is. We could well be looking at the end of this republic for sure. Kevin, let me switch gears if I can, because, again, we could spend all the time we have with you and more visiting about the challenges that we're facing to the election's integrity, both past and future. But we also need to get your current reading on an immense public policy challenge that is looming. And that is that we're going to see still more money, more U.S. dollars printed to pay for immense further expenditures. The Biden team and its friends on the Hill now talking about a $3 trillion infrastructure bill. And I'm just struck by something that you've warned of now for some time, which is if people don't have confidence in the dollar, because we're printing endless amounts of it, and there isn't enough money in the world, basically, to pay the debt on it, what we're borrowing from those who are still willing to hold dollars, that we may well find ourselves losing the status we've long enjoyed of having the dollar be the reserve currency of the world. Give us your current reading on that threat and what is entailed if we cease to have that status.
Well, the intellectual aspect of the threat is called modern monetary theory, which is the idea that you can produce as much money out of thin air as you want to, and you can continue to produce it for whatever you want to use it for. You can give it away, you can build things with it or whatever. But the reality of it is that at some point the bills come due. And it's just imagine if you were a very wealthy person, you were given an unlimited credit card and you never paid it down. You just only increased it. At some point, the credit card company would come after you. Well, in this case, the credit card company is the world, the whole planet. We borrow money from everybody. They used to like our money because it was useful. It was the one thing people could agree on, whether you were in Africa or Latin America or Asia or Europe. You all agreed that the U.S. dollar had value, and it was intrinsically valuable because it was backed by the full faith and credit of the United States government. But at some point, if that money is flooding the world, at some point you say, wait a minute, I'm not sure that this does have value. It's giving to America an exorbitant privilege, which is what it was called in the 70s when they questioned the value of the dollar. And you say, I'm no longer going to loan you money, which leads us to the Federal Reserve would be the only one who would be buying the debt that our government was spewing out. And when you get to that point, bad things happen, because then you have no ability to, there's nothing backing your currency. You have no ability to demonstrate its value. And that's where Zimbabwe went. That's where Venezuela went. That's where Weimar Germany went. Unless you are producing and productive, this idea of spending an extra $3 trillion on top of almost $30 trillion in debt, Just think about the interest payments alone on that will exceed our entire tax base very quickly if interest rates rise.
And that seems to be in prospect now. We had Jerome Powell, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, testifying before the Congress this week. What is he saying, Kevin, and how does it bear on your expectations about the prospect for inflation, which will inevitably prompt the rise in interest rates? No.
Yeah, here's the other big lie. The other big lie is that that inflation is below 2%. I went out to dinner last night before the meeting. There's no way that inflation is below 2%. The inflation is very serious. You look at housing prices, you look at food prices, you look at energy prices, you look at clothing prices, you just go across the board. We are in an inflationary environment. The numbers aren't showing it. The Federal Reserve is hiding it. The way that we calculate it, you know, we do a basket of goods and services. We could go into great detail, but bottom line is it doesn't reflect what people are facing with their paycheck and watching their paycheck dwindle every month. So we are facing inflation. We're seeing interest rates begin to tick up. Just imagine, in our lifetime, Frank, the federal government has paid 10% or more for a dollar borrowed in interest rates. At 10% on $33 trillion, which is where we'll be if we add this infrastructure package, that's $3.3 trillion a year. That is the entire federal tax base. No money left over for defense, no money left over for Social Security or for roads or bridges or anything else beyond that, unless we just flat out borrow it. And that's what we, once you get on that spiral, it's a death spiral. And that also is a risk to the sovereignty of the nation.
Sovereignty of the nation, and again to that currency. And if we do lose the dollar as the reserve currency of the world, it creates this further impetus, as you say, Kevin, for countries to say, we're not helping you with your debt. You have to pay more for whatever money they will give you. And it essentially bankrupts the nation, does it not?
Absolutely bankrupts the nation, and that means that the government will not be able to step in and solve problems or issues. And it really, you watch countries that go down this path, and they never rise again. You know, Germany only through the war, only through the bad, horrible things with Hitler and the Nazi Party. That was the response. We don't want to go that way. We want to avoid that. The United States does not have to go that path.
Yeah, we don't, but we're going to have to come back to you and visit with you in the war room to find out what we're going to do to avoid it. Kevin Freeman, thank you for your time today, as well as the great work that you do at the Economic War Room. Follow Kevin Freeman at economicwarroom.com. God bless you, my friend. Come back to us next week if you would. Next up, Colonel John Mills joins us. We'll take stock with him about some of the things that the Chinese are up to that may also be a problem for us in the very near future. That and more, straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back, and a special welcome to one of our regulars here, Colonel John Mills, United States Army retired, a man who served with distinction in the Special Forces of the United States military for many years. He's also been a civilian director of the Office of Cybersecurity Policy, Strategy, and International Affairs in the Office of the Secretary of Defense. He is a frequent contributor these days to the Epoch Times. John, it's good to have you back. Welcome.
Thank you, Frank. An honor is all appreciated.
One of the themes of the day is election integrity. And we've talked a bit with Michelle Bachmann about her program at Regent University yesterday. We talked with Kevin Freeman about his program in Dallas on the subject. I just wanted to salute you, John, for taking initiatives of your own in your native Commonwealth of Virginia. Talk a little bit about what you've been doing there to try to rectify some of the concerns you've had about election integrity in Virginia in the 2020 election cycle.
Well, thank you, Frank. And the event yesterday at Regent was just absolutely incredible, great presentations. But in the spirit of the work of EveryLegalVote.com and of Kevin Freeman, is pivoting to tactical action, tactical, which may lead to lawsuits. We've had good success in Virginia. I've been able to personally address Chris Piper, the commissioner of elections in Virginia. He responded within 15 minutes of my contact. I think that indicates we're starting to hit the mark. We're also very effectively FOIA-ing Freedom of Information Act, both at the state and five key counties, Prince William, Fairfax, Loudoun, Chesterfield, and Arlington. And I have we have an association. We set up the National Election Integrity Association. So I have multiple persons that are helping significantly. We're going after ballots. Actual ballots, access to ballot, access to actual machines. We've received the election services contracts via FOIA. We've had some pushback, but this works almost every time. I've done hundreds of FOIAs, been on both ends, and just it's very clear and simple with the election commissioners at the county level. It's either A, let's dialogue and figure out how to hand them over, or B, the three of us can meet in front of a judge. And usually, as soon as I start talking, I know how to arrange a meeting with one of the judges, and the three of us can sit down and talk. I know the FOIA system very well. It's kind of a slam dunk for us.
Can you shed any light on what you're learning as a result of the Freedom of Information Acts you have filed and received information for?
I think this is the what we learned, you know, from this last election was that the key is the county levels that roll up to the state. We've got to retake a total understanding and leadership at the county levels. And essentially, there is a surrendering of essentially all responsibilities to these election management companies. I call them election management companies. I mean, obviously, there's well-known ones. I have a map of Virginia, and I know which county is using what machines. And also, it's more than just machines. It's oftentimes the, air quote, expert operators who can walk over to the machine and enable questionable features such as proportional, fractional apportionment, such as operator override. So they have essentially said the ballots and the machines, I'd actually coach them on this, are not under their control, which is factually true. So we are now petitioning the actual holders for the two-year federal requirement, holders of machines and the actual ballots. We want to see the actual ballots from November.
Yeah, see the receipts, as they say. Thank you for the work that you're doing in that regard. Let me pivot to another area that you've also been focusing on, John Mills, and that is China. The Chinese have apparently, in roughly the window in which we were discussing with them the future of U.S.-Chinese relations in places like Alaska, another seizure of an atoll in international waters in the South China Sea, known as Subi Reef. What can you tell us about what they're doing there, and how does this fit into sort of the larger picture of their efforts in that very important body of international waters and airspace? Going back to the days when Joe Biden was vice president and was responsible for trying to persuade them not to do what they're doing.
Well, I was right smack dab in the middle of this. The critical year was 2014. We had announced the Pacific pivot. However, people have to remember there were several confusing episodes that really was distracting the administration. One of them was they'd won the midterms, but they were continuing their purge internally of people who were not aligned with the administration. But they also remember the Sochi Olympics, remember Putin, remember Ukraine, and then also that was the beginning of the OPM breach, 2014, a horrific, horrific loss of data to the CCP. The Subi Reef.
A big cyber attack.
Oh, it was horrible, horrible. Literally, New York Times said potentially thousands of Chinese nationals were executed because the information was derived from that.
To say nothing of what they got in the way of background information that they could use against Americans whose, you know, personal data was acquired by the millions, was it not? Presumably including thee and me.
You and me are definitely part of the what I call essentially they have created digital twins of all of us. I was just talking with Gordon Chang on this digital twin. They have created digital twins of us. But the whole point was 2014, we were strategically distracted, and that's when they massively use that as a green light to establish these fortified reefs. And Subi Reef has become a massive facility. I'm looking it over. It's just incredible. On the flip side, having been a targeteer and having to choose what type of ordnance to put on what type of target, it also simplifies our targeting process and any kind of notional engagement. They're fixed. They can't move. They're nice, big, juicy targets. I call them a watery Maginot line in many ways. So they've simplified our targeting solution and situation. And the key is cutting off water.
That's the upside, I guess. But the downside is that they can use those facilities to target us as well. And they're more present there than we. Let me turn to another topic that I know you're also very fixated on, John, and that is Taiwan. The nominee to become the next commander of the Indo-Pacific Command, a gentleman by the name of Admiral John Aquilino, was testifying before the Senate Armed Services Committee in connection with his nomination yesterday, and was asked by Senator Tom Cotton about his take on Chinese threats to Taiwan, and he allowed us how he considered them to be much more advanced in terms of having the capability to invade the island than many people think. This was an important sort of, if jarring, update, and it came as H.R. McMaster, former Lieutenant General and National Security Advisor to Donald Trump, was testifying on the Hill that he didn't think that we needed to revise our policy of strategic ambiguity to the Chinese about how we would respond to an attack on Taiwan. Your thoughts on both of these gentlemen's comments?
Take McMaster first. I would say we're in a new era. We need to be more precise and clear with our strategic ambiguity. We need to have precise red lines. We need to build up Taiwanese capacity essentially in 2 to 3 areas. And one of them is a vibrant, trained, motivated reserve force that can be mobilized on quick notice. I've already put together some concept plans at the request of others on that. So we would have ready access to weapons, arms, ammunition, including capabilities that could reach out far beyond the shore to make it a fortified porcupine that will make it very costly. There's essentially 3 large deck amphibious warfare ships right now, equivalent to our large, we have approximately 9 to 10. We just lost one pierside at San Diego. Those 3 with 2 or 3 landing ships roughly could land roughly, you know, the Marine force is estimated at 6,000 roughly right now.
These are Chinese vessels capable of offloading that kind of manpower on the island of Taiwan. John, I'm afraid we're out of time to discuss this further, but I take it you're worried about what the Chinese are up to, and we will visit with you about that next week in greater length. Thank you for your time today, my friend, and for the great service you've rendered to our country in uniform and out, and that you're rendering these days, among other things, as a member of the Committee on the Present Danger, China. God bless you. We'll talk with you soon. We'll talk with the rest of you again tomorrow, I hope. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.